I'm pretty sure what's killing the crops is this Brondo stuff.
But Brondo's got what plants crave. It's got electrolytes.
So wait a minute. What you're saying is that you want us to put water on the crops?
Yes.
Water. Like out the toilet?
Well, I mean, it doesn't have to be out of the toilet, but yeah, that's the idea.
But Brondo's got what plants crave.
It's got electrolytes.
Okay, look. The plants aren't growing, so I'm pretty sure that the Brondo's not working. Now, I'm no botanist, but I do know that if you put water on plants, they grow.
Well, I've never seen no plants grow out of no toilet.
Hey, that's good. You sure you ain't the smartest guy in the world?
Yeah.
Okay, look, you want to solve this problem. I want to get my pardon, so why don't we just try it, okay? And not worry about what plants crave.
Brondo's got what plants crave.
Yeah, it's got electrolytes.
What are electrolytes? Do you even know?
It's what they use to make Brondo.
Yeah, but why do they use them to make Brondo?
Because Brondo's got electrolytes.
Recorded live in the USA and covering the whole wide world, this is the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
Right on!
With Bob Seska and Chez Pazienza.
Imperial Steel Incorporated has many of the legal rights of a person. It owns the land and buildings and equipment. It can buy and sell property. It can borrow money. It can sue in court and be sued. Imperial Steel, along with thousands of other legal persons, is a part of our daily living.
The following podcast contains harsh language, nudity, graphic violence, adult situations, and a healthy obsession with empirical reality. The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's what it's called. Bob Seska here. Chez Pazienza over there. The Bubble Genius Bob Indeed. And Chez Show. Brought to you exclusively by Bubble Genius at bubblegenius.com. Best goddamn soap ever.
Idiocracy.
That's my favorite show.
2 weeks from tonight, Beavis and Butthead returns.
Oh, that's right.
2 weeks from tonight, I am counting the seconds, man. Back when we need them the most. Not a moment too soon.
I could start watching.
Our culture is crying out for Beavis and Butthead.
That's right. I could start watching music videos again.
Yeah, that's actually the thing, though. I mean, what are they going to criticize? What are they going to make fun of? Actually, I've seen a couple of the promos, and MTV now more than ever. I mean, at least before, all they made fun of were the videos. Now, MTV in itself is just ripe for fucking mockery.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, and I'll be interested to see whether or not they're bold enough to make fun of themselves, because MTV is notoriously prudish when it comes to making fun of MTV.
I think they've showed a bunch of clips of Beavis and Butthead making fun of Jersey Shore, which, of course, is, oh my God, that's, you know, fish in a barrel.
That's so great. That's so great. Yeah. I mean, I've got lots of stories about dealing with MTV, and they're not pleasant. They don't like to be poked fun at.
Hmm. And yet, like I said, they're so ripe for it.
Yep. Big announcement. We got a whole new just steaming bucket of listeners added to the show this week.
Very well put.
Because we're debuting the show on the Huffington Post. We have our first, I guess you could call this our first official affiliate of the show. So we had
yay.
We go on BobSeska.com. We're on DeusExMalcontent.com, which is your blog. Mm-hmm. And on iTunes. But those are all of our own doing. Now, Huffington Post is like the first kind of outside thing to run the show. Right. I think that's pretty huge. I think that's pretty great.
Welcome, and, steaming bucket.
A steaming bucket of new listeners. Now, if you're a new listener and you're just downloading the show for the first time, first, welcome.
Secondly, we're naked.
We're naked. We're both naked, and we curse like sailors. mainly, what you can expect from this show is it's a political show, of course. The focus is on the media and presidential politics. That's what you're going to get. It's a political show, media, presidential politics, but mainly whatever the hell we feel like talking about. I mean, we just kind of start the show. We kind of have a short list of things that we might talk about. And if we get to all of them, we get to all of them. If we don't, we don't. It's sort of just we start talking extemporaneously, and whatever comes out, comes out. And sometimes we even include some stuff from our personal lives, our sad and drunken personal lives.
And, it always is fun, isn't it?
And then, as evidenced by the idiocracy discussion, lots of pop culture in there, too. So, But, you know, it's a spontaneous show, no script, and it's very often not safe for work. So if you're going to listen to this at work, God damn it, put on some headphones. you know, I don't know if you had a chance to watch the Republican debate from Tuesday night.
You know what? I did miss that one.
It was on, well, it was, I think it was only streaming.
Although, to his credit, really, I liked Howard Fineman's description of it as what is it, the bizarro faculty lounge? That's pretty fitting, actually, because I did see clips from it.
Yeah, well, it was basically the Herman Cain show. It's his turn to rise to the top. I mean, they sort of had this revolving door with the Republican candidates. And, you know, first it was Trump, and then it was, I don't know, there was another, Michelle Bachmann after him. And then Rick Perry, and now it's Herman Cain. The idea is that they pop up, they become very popular, and then they just get ripped to shit. That's what happens.
Cain is definitely the pizza of the week.
Yeah, and Cain's going to get it. I mean, Cain's very popular right now. It's still a long time before Iowa. You know, he's not going to last. I mean, it's obviously the trend is to eliminate these people one by one as crackpots, and then eventually, you know, it becomes Mitt Romney. Though I'm still...
Is it honestly a long time to Iowa, though? Because I didn't Matto say something about the other day. I admit I've been really, really busy this week. But didn't Matto say something about how they're moving up? New Hampshire wants to move up. And if that happens, then that means that Iowa moves up as well. And essentially, we could see the real campaign season in earnest start as early as a month and a half from now.
Well, I mean, that's what I thought. I thought they were talking about moving New Hampshire up to early December.
Right.
That'd be ridiculous.
Matto's point is that if that were to happen, then Iowa would probably attempt to jump ahead of it.
Well, eventually, the 2012 campaign will start 6 months ago. And we're like, when the hell were the primaries? We missed them?
It'll start 3.5 hours after inauguration.
Right. So, but the big discussion point in the debate was, of course, Herman Cain's 999 plan. But, I mean, it really kind of came to the forefront in Tuesday night's Bloomberg debate. And it occurred to me as I was watching it, I said, why does 999 sound so familiar? And then I thought of one of my favorite movies, one of my favorite recent movies, Quentin Tarantino's Inglourious Basterds, where we're treated to this.
999999!
Right? So that's every time I hear 999, I hear
999999!
Just wait until they do the Hitler parody where Hitler finds out about Herman Cain's 999 pizza deal.
I mean, I know there's a few extra nines in there, but yeah, it's Herman Cain's
999999
plan. But, you know, as with any ridiculous Republican idea that sounds really good, that's really compact and can fit onto a bumper sticker like Herman Cain's
999999
plan, this one is just
keep the extra nine off for savings.
I mean, it's just it's another plan that, you know, is a mile wide and an inch deep, and it will never work. It will never pass. And if it does pass, it's going to be, like most Republican tax plans, a huge boondoggle for the rich, and the poor are going to, you know, working class, middle class Americans are going to get screwed out of it. And according to Think Progress, the Center for American Progress, the director of tax and budget policy, Michael Linden, did a report about Herman Cain's 999 plan. The 999 plan would have generated a bit less than $1.3 trillion in total federal tax revenue. That may sound like a lot, but it's only 9.2% of GDP. In 2007, we actually collected 18.5% of GDP in tax revenues. In other words, Herman Cain's
999999
plan would cut federal revenue in half. Basically, what it would end up doing is generating the largest federal budget deficit since World War II.
Yeah, but we'd get free crazy bread.
Linden also found that someone in the bottom quintile of earners, who currently pays about 2% of his or her income in federal taxes, would pay about 18% under Cain's plan. 9% on every dollar they make, of course, plus 9% on every dollar they spent, which would likely be close to all of them. A middle-class individual would see his or her taxes go from about 14% to about 18%. But someone in the richest 1% of Americans would see his or her tax rate fall from about 28% to about 11%. All in all, I mean, and I hear people, otherwise smart people, going, well, this sounds good. Let's give it a shot. No one, and that's what drives me nuts about the television coverage of the debates. You know, it's one thing to talk about who won or who lost. That's bullshit. Who cares? The second thing is, this is the second layer. If you even get beyond that who won or who lost layer, the next layer is, let's fact check these guys. Like the Bloomberg Washington Post people ballyhooed at the beginning of the show and in immediately after the debate that they've got this gigantic panel of fact checkers feverishly looking over all of the statements made by the candidates and checking them for accuracy. At the end of the debate, they checked one fact. I mean, literally, it was one thing that they talked about. I don't even remember what it was. It was just some number. It's like Mitt Romney said X thousands of dollars, and it was actually Y thousands of dollars. That's almost irrelevant, too. I mean, okay, it's good to fact check. I'll take that in lieu of anything else.
Do you know why? Because every single thing that you just said, while completely informative, was boring as shit. And by the way, I'm not criticizing you for that. I'm just saying that in the great scheme of things, numbers are wonky. You know, I made the Beavis and Butthead line earlier. I remember how they used to always say words, 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 whenever they would be reading something. There are people out there who are just like that when it comes to numbers. They'll get words, numbers, numbers, and they don't pay attention.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why... people look at the media, the networks, God knows I was a part of it for a long time. They look at stuff like that, and politics as horse racing is exciting and thrilling, and using as many survivor type metaphors and throwing out a bunch of cool graphics and making it look like a game show. That's cool. That works. That grabs people's attention. Giving them actual fact, that's ridiculous. Nobody wants to sit around and watch that. It's necessary. It's 100% necessary. But
yeah, you're exactly right. I mean,
just because it's necessary doesn't mean it's fun to watch.
I mean, a reporter can't come on and say, you know what, the 9999999999 plan is going to raise a working family's income. I mean, tax burden. It's going to basically double it from around 9 to around 18. They can't say that. What they've got to do is substantiate that. And then when they substantiate it, it's all of those boring numbers that I just went through. It's all of that wonky economic speak.
It'd be better if they could just swear, like if they could call it horseshit. That'd be fun. Right. Just one guy to basically say, so what do you think of this? Is it on the up and up or is it horseshit? Nope, sorry, horseshit.
Yeah, that's right. Just for Charlie Rose to speak up, interject right in the middle of the whole thing.
You dick!
Right. But I mean, they can't do that, obviously. And so, I mean, it's extraordinarily frustrating to see these guys debating the merits. It's like they're debating. Let's say they're in an alternate universe where Brando has electrolytes. You know, it doesn't matter that it's what plants crave. It doesn't matter that that's not what plants crave. They're speaking on a plane of existence where plants actually do crave that. So what the reporter has to say, what the analyst has to say at the end of it is say, you know what? No, plants don't crave electrolytes, and they certainly will not thrive on Brando. Here's what actual science tells us about photosynthesis and how plants can thrive and flourish. If you give them water and light, they grow. If you give them Gatorade, nothing happens. They die. They don't grow.
The problem is, we've talked about this a couple of times before, which is that there are so many different media outlets now and so many different types of polling and so many different ways of getting your information that people approach. I've said this till I'm blue in the face, but it's true. People approach arguments now with their own sets of facts. And I don't recommend it, but watch Fox News for a few hours. Honest to God, it's like an alternate universe. It's the alternate universe you just talked about. Where red is blue and up is down and cats are dogs and all that other fun, happy shit.
Yeah.
It really is. It's... You can look outside your window and see what's going on. You can read. You can take in information. And then you can turn on Fox, and every single thing that you think you know will basically be turned on its head.
Yeah.
By every single person on Fox News. And that crap goes on 24/7.
Well, and you wonder, for example, why Drudge has so much traffic and why, you know, a wonkier blog like, well, like Ezra Klein's blog, for example. This is sort of my go-to website for wonk is like Ezra Klein, Matt Iglesias, these guys. I mean, here's something. Here's Ezra Klein's analysis of 999. I think he just posted this today. Kane's plan, by contrast, and of course we know what Kane's plan is called. It's called
999999.
And Kane's plan acts like a 27% payroll tax with basically no exemptions. To understand why this is, or if you really want the details, see, okay, blah, 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 blah. Simple subtraction. $13,500 minus $8,400.
Did you just yada, yada, yada?
Yeah, I'm yada, 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 because I'm trying to prove a point here that the wonk stuff, I mean, you know, people's eyes glaze over. But it's so goddamn important. Ezra, in his blog, makes a case for the 999 plan being an increase in taxes. The tax burden, basically, you know, for a middle-class family earning $50,000 a year, they will pay $5,000 more in taxes a year under Kane's
999999
plan. That's what will happen. And then, you know, rich people will pay.
I like that you memorized how many nines there are on that, by the way. It's very well done.
Rich people will get a tax cut. Is a rich family making $1 million a year will get a tax cut of $41,000. Rich people, $1 million earners, tax cut $41,000. You know, and this is, but I mean, then Ezra goes on to do his work. I mean, the calculations, Chez, would make your eyes bleed. It's like CT equals 100X, PT equals X, 100 minus 100X. I mean, this is like this big Pythagorean kind of algebra that's going on here. And I mean, it's such a good point that, you know, while we need this, it just, as long as news is commercial, as long as modern news relies upon ratings, we're not going to get that, which is one of the reasons why we've got to get the money out of news. But that's easier said than done.
Right. Well, when I first started, you know, my career, I worked at a TV station in Miami called WSVN. Now, at the time, SVN was moving over to the whole sort of it bleeds, it leads thing. And I mean, they were at the forefront of really doing insane news. But we had one reporter on staff. And they've got, by the way, they had some great reporters, and they still do. But we had one reporter on staff, a guy named Mark Ledner. And his thing was he would take – they would assign him these wonky ass pieces about local government and gas prices and all that kind of thing. And he would take it and he basically do the stories as if he were talking to 4-year-olds. And he would do it in these incredibly interesting ways that basically made things very simple for people to understand. And as God is my witness, to this day, I'm still sort of in shock over the fact that networks don't have a lot of people like that who are willing to basically break down really wonky stories that are important and say, look, here's the part that you really need to know about. And really, when I say that he did it like he was talking to 4-year-olds, I mean, he was very clever about it. He didn't really do it like he was a condescending asshole. But once in a blue moon, I would love to see people on TV really, really take the initiative, and people in, you know, print obviously is a different story, but people on TV really take the initiative and really just spell it out for us, because it's important. It's really important, and you can make it. There are ways that you can make it interesting. It's never going to be thrilling, but it's important crap.
Yeah, yeah. Well, instead of that, I mean, what we're going to get is how well or how poorly Herman Cain sold his 999 plan, or right, how absent Rick Perry was, rather than telling us, well, does this plan even work? You know, is that person going to make a difference in the status of the economy? Is this plan going to ruin the economy? Is it going to make everything worse? Is it going to roll back the recovery?
Well, you and I have gone through this a couple of times. They can't. Well, they can, but it's almost like they can't. They can't say, look, the 999 plan is bullshit. It doesn't work, because they're paralyzed by the notion that if they say something that is sort of against that kind of thing, that they'll be perceived as having the liberal bias. And it really, it's depressing. It gets to the point where, like I said, it's paralysis. They're paralyzed, and they don't actually report facts anymore.
No, well, they can't.
Everything is color. Everything is up for debate.
Yeah, Well, that's, I mean, that's what it, that's exactly what's happened. They've basically turned politics into, you know, the halftime show on Monday Night Football.
Exactly.
You know, and that's, I mean, because that's all they can get away with because they're afraid of being badgered by, I mean, I,
they're,
you know,
afraid,
I don't know,
of being badgered by the right. They're never afraid of being badgered by the left, believe
yeah,
me.
Yeah, well, that's true. You're exactly right. It's the right. The right's been doing it consistently and totally on message.
And very well. They stay on message very, very well. And in my entire career in television news, and I was in it for a very long time, I worked in a lot of newsrooms where I saw the black cloud that hung over the newsroom was this sort of, we always have to be careful. And when you do that, it basically leads to overcompensation.
Yeah.
And I've worked in a lot of places where we overcompensated.
Go back to the 60s and read things that Spiro Agnew said, or, you know, read things that Phyllis Schlafly said. I mean, this is, and you swear it was torn right from Rush Limbaugh's 2011 playbook. Or Sean Hannity's, for that matter. I love hearing Fox News bitch about the mainstream media when they're the most popular cable news network on television. Oh, the mainstream media, they're all against us.
Right. There is no more mainstream than News Corp.
That's right. That's right. News Corp owns what? What percentage of the media is owned by News Corp? 30%? 40%?
Whatever percentage is not owned by either Cap Cities or NBC Uni.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or Time Warner.
That, you know, that's one of the things that the Occupy Wall Street people ought to be doing as a demand. And I think Matt Taibbi wrote about this a little bit. It was yesterday.
Very well, by the way. Extremely well. Very good little piece.
Break up these goddamn monopolies. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's you know, and I came up through radio. And as I was trying to break into radio in the early 90s, late 80s, early 90s, it was, you could see it happening. It was happening right there before your eyes. They started consolidating all these radio stations. There was just, you know, it used to be, you have at least a couple of local AM radio stations, AM full service radio stations where you get the news and the weather and some music and some local personalities. You know, they have a community bulletin board segment, you know, things like that. And suddenly all of those radio stations began to be bought up by these larger and larger conglomerates. I think Clear Channel owns, what, 80% of radio right now. Which
Clear
is what,
it's Clear Channel and is it still Infinity? Clear Channel Infinity. Clear Channel owns everything. Every single Clear Channel station sounds exactly alike.
Oh, that's right. That's right. A lot of your local radio stations that you listen to, I mean, most of the personalities are voice tracked through this. You know what the system is called? For a lot of these radio stations where it's sort of a computerized system. It's called profit. I mean, that's exactly what it's called, the profit system. At least that's what they were using several years ago. And, you know, they have voice tracks that are recorded in Denver. They're popped into the profit system and they're played back. I mean, these are things. And I love the idea of getting money out of politics. I think that's a big part of all of this. But I think you've got to get the ratings out of the news media. And if you think getting money out of politics is an uphill battle, a nearly impossible one, try getting ratings out of the news media.
I was going to say, let me get you your horse and your joust.
Right.
Seriously, and I'll find you a windmill.
Say every progressive person on Twitter stopped watching MSNBC and CNN. And, of course, Fox News Channel, Headline News. And we just stopped. And we got all of our news from the internet. We got all of our analysis from Ezra Klein and Matt Iglesias. That's still, they're going to cower in fear at the loss of, you know, 0.0005% of their audience. It's so aggravating. And believe me, I want it to happen. But I just don't see it. It's just impossible. I don't see it actually happening. So meanwhile, what happens is you get discussions, you know, about Herman Cain's
9999999
plan. And in a way that, oh, well, this, you know what? He did a good job making that case.
Well, no, the thing with Cain is that it's not what you say. This has been since, Jesus, the dawn of the media era. It's not what you say. It's how you say it. And Cain is folksy, and he comes across as a straight talker. He sure sounds like that. He could honestly be telling you the sky is bright green, and it wouldn't matter if he says it. If he says it in an endearing enough manner, people will eat it up. And for some odd, twisted reason, nobody will question him on it.
oh, he did a good job telling us about how the sky is green. Good. Yeah, good job.
Right. Yeah. Well, you know what? He convinced voters. He was that. That's going to win voters over. The way that he said it, that's going to win them over.
He closed the deal on the sky is green thing, right? Unbelievable. Yeah, it's one of those things where I even wonder whether or not we should talk about it, because there is no tangible solution to it.
No, it's an absolute waste. I mean, not talking about it, that's fine, but no, it's maybe this is just me being the cynical prick that I am, but I don't. We're way, way, way too far down the rabbit hole.
Yeah. Well, you know, there are people like Rachel Maddow. And as I've said many times, yeah, I mean, Rachel does it. I mean, she does what needs to be done. I mean, in terms of, she gets wonky, and she does it in an entertaining way. I mean,
the only problem is that she's reaching an audience. She's basically preaching to the choir. I wish she weren't. Right. I would love that.
That's right. So, actually, you know what? We got to get to Bubble Genius. The show today is brought to you by BubbleGenius.com, as it always is, the Bubble Genius Bob and Chez show. And this is the latest commercial from Bubble Genius. Here we go.
Dracula!
I want to drink your blood.
Dracula, don't be silly. This isn't real blood. It's the fantastic blood bath bubble bath from Bubble Genius.
What?
And like all their great bath and body products, it's 100% vegan and full of yummy smelling suds.
Well then, I want to drink your tub.
Oh, silly Drac. It may smell good, but it doesn't taste good.
I want to wash your back.
Blood bath, bubble bath, and all kinds of spooky, sudsy stuff. This Halloween, only from Bubble Genius.
www.bubblegenius.com.
Shove Bob and Chez into your pants and haul them around with you wherever you go. Subscribe to the Bob and Chez Show in the podcast section on iTunes.
Make sure to put in your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and get 15% off your entire order from Bubble Genius.
That spot's great. It sounds like the Dracula puppet musical from Forgetting Sarah Marshall.
So, I mean, I want to talk about something, and you know what? My goddamn... Hey, do you have this issue? I am constantly having this issue with Talking Points Memo lately. I was just trying to bring up a link that I had saved, bookmarked for Talking Points Memo, and it takes like an hour to load a talkingpointsmemo.com page. And I'm not sure exactly why. And I don't know if it's a Firefox issue or if it's a Talking Points Memo issue, but it's infuriating. It actually freezes Firefox. And now I'm looking at it and there's nothing coming up. All I want is this Michelle Bachmann story, god damn it. Basically, Michelle Bachmann today said that she wants to adopt the Reagan tax plan.
Sure she does.
There's this myth that Reagan was this big tax cutter, when in fact he raised taxes, I think it's something like 7 times.
Invoking Reagan, that's a really bold statement for a Republican candidate to make.
Yeah, isn't it? It's totally original. You know what I didn't know? Michelle Bachmann is like 15 years older than us. She's like in her mid-50s.
Is she really?
Yeah, I had no idea. Anyway, she said that for my tax plan, I take a page out of one of my great economists that I admire, Ronald Reagan.
Oh, dear God. Make it stop.
Ronald Reagan was a great economist.
Yeah, well, on top of everything else, he's a great economist.
She says, and under my tax plan, I want to adopt the Reagan tax plan. It brought the economic miracle of the 1980s. Why not go with what works? I want to reinstitute the Reagan tax model from the 1980s.
What is it with Republicans and deification? What is it with their need to put people and the Constitution and Reagan and people and things that they appreciate, they can't just be stuff that they appreciate. They have to be these infallible creatures, the founding fathers and the Bible. Well, the Bible, that goes without saying. Reagan, I mean, it just at some point, it just becomes dizzying.
Yeah. Well, what they do is they mythologize these people and actually attribute
exactly
to them.
Good word.
Yeah. I mean, they attribute to them qualities that they never actually had. I mean, PolitiFact, right. PolitiFact jumped all over this. In 1981, this is according to PolitiFact, 1981, Reagan's first year, top tax rate was 70%. Reagan's first year. This is the top tax rate. Hitting individuals earning $108,000 and couples earning $215,000. Top rate dropped immediately to 50% in 1982. Still much larger than it is today. And stayed there. Top tax rate, 50% in 1982. Stayed there through 1986. Reagan's almost done by 1986. Midterms of his second term. Still 50% of the top tax rate. In 1987, top rate fell again to 38.5%. And in 1988, fell to 28%. But it kicked in, all right? It kicked in at $17,000 for married individuals, $29,000 for married couples. So taxes were much, much higher during the Reagan years.
I'm sorry. I've started looking at internet porn. Well, exactly like what you're saying, and what I referenced a minute ago about the sort of deification thing, and it's shameless deification. It's deification and mythologization. Can you say that?
Yeah.
Mythologize. How the hell? Fuck it. I'm not even going to bother. I'm not even going to try to turn that into the wrong word. it's doing it and refusing to acknowledge that you might actually be wrong. That that video that I put up on the blog a couple weeks ago, the video that I think Progress did, where they played the Obama speech and the Reagan speech side by side, where they essentially said the exact same thing, which was, you can't expect middle class people to pay more taxes than millionaires. I mean, Reagan said that. This is not some once again, it's not something from the Bible that's been handed down over the centuries. This is something that's right there in front of you that you can look at. You can actually see him saying it. And they just disregard it. They just disregard it like he never said it, like it never happened. It goes against the blinders that they put on themselves when it comes to seeing this kind of shit. And they disregard everything else.
Yeah, there's a fantasy world that they live in, and it's only a fantasy world. It's not. I don't think a lot of these people legitimately believe this. I don't think Michelle Bachmann legitimately believes that Reagan was this great tax savior. I think she does it. I think it's just a matter of marketing and gimmickry.
Sure. No, she just knows that's something to invoke. It's cynical. It's completely cynical.
I mean, for a while, I really believed, like, okay, these people are genuinely stupid. They're just stupid with a bunch of O's in there. But it's what they're doing is they're not necessarily stupid. They're just playing to a naive audience.
Very true.
They're telling certain types of people exactly what they want to hear and getting away with it because they've badgered the press. And this goes back to what we were talking about before. They've badgered in the press to not – actually run everything through a logic machine.
Well, I think the interesting thing is that the people that I'm really trying not to be some condescending asshole, I swear. Rare for me, I know. But the people that I think they're playing most to live in a very, very black and white world. I'm not breaking any new ground by saying that. They live in a world of heroes and villains. And people like Reagan, they have to be, once again, they have to be flawless. And people like Obama are pure evil. They can never be right under any circumstances. And that's the way they get ahead. That's sort of that's their political philosophy, their political ethos. That's how they play to their audience. They live in a world of absolutes. And moral certitude is a painfully ridiculous thing.
Yeah. Speaking of moral certitude, let's talk about this a little bit.
Do we want a candidate who is a conservative out of convenience or one who is a conservative out of deep conviction? Do we want a candidate who is a good moral person or do we want a candidate who is a born-again follower of the Lord Jesus Christ? Rick Perry is a proven leader. He is a true conservative, and he is a genuine follower of Jesus Christ. Would you join me in welcoming the governor of the great state of Texas, Rick Perry?
That was the That was from the Values Voters Summit.
How about neither, you fuckstick?
What is with that voice, too? That accent.
It's preacher voice.
It's preacher voice, but it's like, no matter where they come from, it's always the same voice. It's always like this, and it's always a little lispy, and it's always got a southern drawl to it. I can't ever imagine.
I like the lisp, though. It makes me think that he's like one step away from getting busted in an airport bathroom.
Yeah, I'm just wondering if there's like a, you know, like a New Jersey version of that. Yeah, I want someone to, you know, to believe in the Lord Jesus Christ. Yeah, come on. You're not going to see that. It's always, even if the guy's from New Jersey, he's still going to say, I want a candidate who believes in the Lord Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
But I don't know how those two things ended up going hand in hand, but somehow they did.
It's painful. I mean, from what I know of him, Jeffress I called him in Huffington this week. I called him a demagogue, and he apparently wields a fuck ton of influence in the Dallas area, which to me is not surprising at all. But yeah, I mean, he speaks like somebody who has an enormous amount of celestial and earthly power.
Yeah. And it's funny, just like this. It's just this self-satisfied, smug.
Yeah, the smug thing. The smug thing always pisses me off with Christians, with those kinds of Christians.
Grinning very extraordinarily, like almost fastidiously well-groomed.
Yeah.
Here's the story, in case you missed it this past weekend. Texas pastor introduced Rick Perry at a major conference of Christian conservatives on Friday as a genuine follower of Jesus Christ. And then walked outside and attacked Mitt Romney's religion, calling the Mormon church a cult and stating that Mr. Romney, quote, is not a Christian. Comments by the pastor, Robert Jeffress of Dallas, injected a potentially explosive issue into the presidential campaign, the belief held by many evangelicals that Mormons are not Christians. Well, this is nothing new. I mean, Mitt Romney had to do a whole, I remember it distinctly, Mitt Romney had to do a whole kind of, if you remember President Obama's Philadelphia address, Mitt Romney did something like that 4 years ago.
He did, yeah. I remember that.
Where he had to do a whole speech about his Mormonism.
Yep. And he had to basically ease people's fears.
Yeah.
Which is the most ridiculous notion ever. Because yeah. Mormonism is, you know, I think I wrote this past week. I'm like, you know, is it a cult in a certain sense, can you argue that it was the brainchild, that the Mormon faith was the brainchild of, you know, con men? Has it been perpetuated by, you know, people who are very power hungry? And can you even say that it's been adhered to by, you know, people who are kind of weak and desperate and use it as a crutch? Yeah, actually, you kind of can. But the thing is, you can say that about every single faith-based religion. And that's the thing that gets to me, is Jeffress stands up there. And once again, it's like you said, it's the smug, it's the arrogance to proclaim that not only is his God the real God, but that everybody else has to sort of genuflect before that God.
Yeah.
And I mean, the thing that pisses me off most about it is that these fucking assholes think – even for a second, I mean, there are people who come in and basically do command performances, like, you know, the Republican, you know, the Republican candidates come and they all show up for this values voters thing. And as the campaign rolls along, you're going to hear more and more about religion. And what bothers me the most is that whenever the candidates start doing this, especially at a time like now, it pisses me off because I just think we don't have time for this. We don't have time to appease a Robert Jeffress or to appease a Pastor Rick Warren or one of those galactic assholes. We don't have time to right now for our candidates to be mouthing metaphysical platitudes when there is so much that is genuinely wrong with our country. If you have faith, fine. I disagree with it completely. I think it's fucking nonsense, but that's fine. That's your personal decision. But right now, faith in God, faith in religion, all that happy horseshit is not a plan. And I don't want to hear, even for a second, do we not have the luxury for our candidates to start basically trying to kiss these people's ass, to pander to them, to make them happy. I want to hear about what you're really going to do to fix the country. I don't give a fuck whether your God can beat up somebody else's God. I don't care one fucking bit about that.
Well, this is precisely how they get people to buy into, you know, it's a thing that Barack Obama 4 years ago said the whole thing about people clinging to their guns and religion. Well, that's exactly right. I mean, the president wasn't saying anything that was made up. I mean, no. He was actually speaking the truth about conservative voters who are have been duped into supporting things that run contrary to their own economic best interest because, you know, they're, you know, the guys like Jeffress play to their religion.
That's it, exactly. And it's not a matter of, oh, they cling to their stupid guns and their stupid religion. It's that you can put so much over on somebody if you just play up the guns and the religion thing. Mm-hmm. If you come and you approach somebody and you say, I love guns, and by the way, I'm a man of God, then it's fucking astonishing the shit that you can get away with,
yeah,
with the average conservative voter.
Yeah.
The average sort of hardcore conservative voter. I'm actually not going to lump all conservatives into the same group. But, you know, yeah, your average sort of hard right wing fucking douchebag.
Right. Well, later on, Jeffress was asked outside and basically made it perfectly clear that Mormonism was a cult.
Do we prefer somebody who is truly a believer in Jesus Christ or somebody who is a good moral person but is a part of a cult? And it's not politically correct to say, but it's true, Mormonism is a cult. And for those reasons, besides Governor Romney's lack of consistency on social issues...
Yeah. So
my 2,000-year-old superstition is completely sane. Yours is crazy. That's honest to God what it comes down to. No, you know what? My absolutely fucking irrational, insane belief system, that's okay. Yours, though? No. Can't have that.
Well, this is exactly why I don't believe that Mitt Romney is going to win the nomination. I don't think there's just no chance in hell. The Republicans are going to run a candidate who is basically hated by the base.
And the funny thing is that is one of the biggest examples, if you want to call it that, of them sort of voting against their own interests. Because the bottom line is, look, Romney may be a flip-flopper and he may be freaking white bread, but he stands the best chance of beating Obama. He does.
Yeah.
If he can get past the, you know, the hardcore dipshit contingent – when in the primary season for the Republicans, then, you know, he's got a really good chance of going on and going head to head with Obama.
Mm-hmm.
But they'll, yeah, like you said, there's a pretty good chance they'll cut him off at the knees.
Well, and despite their recent declared love of the Constitution, Republicans, you know, don't mind putting a religious test on their candidates. And that's exactly, yeah, a religious test on candidates is unconstitutional. It runs counter to the values that are outlined in the Constitution. You can't say, you know, that you worship and praise and deify the founding fathers and the words of the Constitution. You can't call yourself a constitutional originalist and you can't hold those things up as marble values if you are then applying a religious test to your candidates. And this is exactly what's happening. It happened to President Obama, you know, 4 years ago. And this is a guy who repeatedly confirmed the fact that he's a Christian, you know, and they tried to target him as being a Muslim, which I think was just obviously more veiled racism. He's black. He's, you know,
he's got an
exotic name. And so he's not one of us.
Well, that was just fear, yeah, of a changing America.
Yeah.
You know, it's racism. We've also talked about this. It's racism and xenophobia. It's just fear. It's old, fucking terrified, you know, white people. It's the citizens of Rockridge being terrified that Sheriff Bart just rode into town and what it means for them.
Right. Right. So, but I mean, you know, you got to figure that, you know, South Carolina is important. Florida is going to be important. How is Mitt Romney going to fare when you have, you know, gigantic swaths of the Republican base who all, in fact, speak like this, the Lord Jesus Christ, you know, casting their ballots? I don't see how Mitt Romney gets past that, which is why I keep saying I still believe that Rick Perry, at the end of the day, is going to end up being the nominee. And it might be out of default. It might be out of just a complete split. I mean, if you thought that, that maybe 2008 was contentious between Edwards, Obama, and Clinton, just imagine once we get to that we get to those primaries, and they're going to be early primaries, which means all of these major candidates will still have plenty of money. You know, won't be, you know, blasted through over the course of that additional couple of months. So if we start in December, we're going to have at least, you know, four candidates going into South Carolina, going into, I don't know where Florida is going to end up. But that's right. Going to divide the vote. And I think out of that fray, you're going to still see nominee Mitt Romney. I mean, Rick Perry, not Mitt Romney.
I don't know. I mean, Perry has gone dark, certainly here over the past few weeks.
Yeah.
Which basically means, you know, a lot of people say that means is, you know, it's over for him. Actually, no. That could very well mean that he has the potential to make a comeback, because everybody loves a comeback. But in the end, you know, the person, I think you put up a cartoon about this in a blog the other night. I really do feel kind of sorry for Romney in a very weird way. You know, I'm not going to feel sorry for a freaking multimillionaire. But, you know, he's a guy who actually is performing very well. And when I say performing, I mean doing all the little things that Republican candidates are supposed to do. And he cannot win over the hardcore folks. He just can't. And it's sad. It's like everything he does. Well, here I am. I'm here. Look, you know what? I performed terrific in that debate. And man, I took it on the chin and came back hard. And, you know, he's pretty steady and steadfast and strong for him. And yet you're right. They're desperate. It's like anybody but him. But in the end, you know, I do actually think that Romney could still be the nominee.
Well, forgive me for comparing apples to oranges here, because it is kind of that way. But if you rewind again 4 years, at this point in time in the Democratic field, Hillary Clinton was basically the presumptive nominee.
True.
And I mean, no one else was even anywhere near. I mean, talking about national polls, she had a lead of something like 20% at this stage in 2000, and I guess it was 2007. And then, you know, it started to close a little bit, but it's still, you know, it was unheard of that anyone else was going to get the nomination. And, you know, I think to a certain degree, Rick Perry kind of had to go silent a little bit. He had to kind of ease back.
Right.
You know, or the other explanation is that the Republicans are just systematically elevating a guy and then knocking them back for the sake of nominating Mitt Romney. But I just don't see how they can do it. I don't see how they can possibly get beyond the radical Tea Party Lord Jesus Christ vote. It doesn't seem possible.
Republicans are absolutely their base now. There's no doubt about it. All your base are belong to them.
Yeah.
They have very much.
You mean the values voters?
Yeah, I mean that's exactly. Those, you know, I'm not the first one to say this, but the left has always kind of pushed away its fringe. The right embraces it and loves every single second of it, basically, you know, takes orders from it.
Right. And then I think, where did I have this? Rush Limbaugh today basically came out against Mitt Romney. I mean, this guy still is the reigning and de facto leader of the Republican Party. And it's not Eric Cantor. It's not Paul Ryan. It's certainly not John Boehner. And it's not Mitt Romney, I assure you. Rush Limbaugh is still the guy. And he says, Romney is not a conservative. I'm going to do my Rush Limbaugh. Romney is not a conservative. He's not,
it's
folks.
Actually pretty good.
You can argue with me all day long on that, but he isn't. I'm plucking my shirt like he does spastically.
Oh, you're somewhere between him and Limbaugh and Richard Nixon.
What he has going for him is that he's not Obama and that he's doing incredibly well in the debates because he's done it a long time. He's very seasoned. He never makes mistakes, and he's going to keep winning these things if he never makes a mistake. It's that simple. But I'm not personally ready to settle on anybody yet, and I know that neither are most of you. And I also know that most of you...
And you're not, because I told you.
Right.
Because I said that.
Right. The Republican establishment is trying to nail this down and end it. You know that that's happening, and I know that you don't want it to happen, and neither do I. Right. But, you know, there's always There's always a shot for Mr.
9999999.
But I don't think he's going to do it either. Because, again, much like Mitt Romney, you know, Republicans nominating a black man.
Yeah,
there's a better chance they'll nominate a Mormon than a black man.
Well, there, I mean, look, you know, Bill Maher made that perfect fucking statement. I think it was last weekend where he mentioned the fact that that the thing about being black in the Republican Party is that you're there to basically absolve racism. You're there to basically make them feel good. And your goal as a black candidate for anything in the Republican Party these days is to essentially never, ever, ever bring up the subject of race.
Yeah. And boy, did they rip in. Boy, did the base rip into Herman Cain when he brought up race.
Shit, yeah.
Jesus. Lord Jesus Christ brought up race. Today's show brought to you, as it always is, by BubbleGenius.com. You got to support liberal businesses, folks. If you're going to go out and buy gifts, if you're going to buy soap and bath body products for yourself, please, you know, go to Bubble Genius. Support liberal organizations, liberal businesses, independent businesses. You want to stick it to the man, stick it to corporations. Go to Bubble Genius and buy all your stuff there. Got holiday season coming up. You can start prepping for the holiday season by picking up all your gifts, your Christmas gifts from BubbleGenius.com. And here are all of their Halloween specials.
I want to drink your blood.
Dracula, don't be silly. This isn't real blood. It's the fantastic blood bath bubble bath from Bubble Genius.
What?
And like all their great bath and body products, it's 100% vegan and full of yummy smelling suds.
Well then, I want to drink your tub.
Oh, silly Drac. It may smell good, but it doesn't taste good.
I want to wash your back.
Blood bath, bubble bath, and all kinds of spooky, sudsy stuff. This Halloween, only from Bubble Genius.
www.bubblegenius.com.
The Bubble Genius Bob and Chez Show.
That's what it's called. Make sure to enter your promo code Bob and Chez, BOBANDCHEZ, and get 15% off your entire order at BubbleGenius.com. It's a bargain at twice the price. They pass the savings along to you. I wanted to talk about this for a little bit. The Republicans filibustered the American Jobs Act. Remember a couple of weeks ago after the president's speech, you and I were sitting here, Chez, on the show, and we're like, God damn it, the president hit the ball out of the park. And I said, yeah, I dare.
And silly, silly you for assuming that they couldn't filibuster it.
Right. I dare the Republicans to vote against American jobs. It's good. I mean, the details of the bill are, you know, self-evident. I mean, I listed a bunch of them in my Huffington Post piece yesterday, and they're numerous. I mean, the benefits of this jobs bill, they just go on and on. There's tax cuts, incentives. It's going to reduce unemployment by a full percentage point. It's going to increase GDP by 2. I mean, it's just like it goes on and on. It's actually going to cut the deficit by $6 billion over 10 years. I mean, it's just on and on and on. Just so many great things. There's a tax credit for GIs. They didn't only vote against it; they filibustered it. I mean, all 46 Republican senators came out against this bill. I mean, you know, and do you hear now? Granted, I will tell you this, and I haven't mentioned this anywhere, but I have literally not turned on cable news. I mean, other than to watch a debate, I have not turned on cable news in maybe, I don't know, 2-3 weeks. I feel like
and
a million
you are
bucks
all the better
by the
for
way.
It.
Yeah, right. So, I mean, I don't know if there are Democrats just flooding the airwaves right now saying how could the Republicans have filibustered American jobs? I mean, they filibustered jobs. All 46 of them did. But I doubt that's happening. I will easily retract this statement if like Nancy Pelosi was on every news network several times today saying how could they possibly have done, or Harry Reid, how could they possibly have filibustered American jobs. But I doubt they have.
Had like two massive projects on my desk for the past like week and a half, so I don't know either.
Well, let's just say by history as the precedent, I don't think they have. I mean, there were two Democrats actually filibustered with the Republicans. Ben Nelson, of course, big Fred Flintstone, Ben Nelson. And then this is so disappointing. John Tester. There were several other Democrats who had problems with the bill. Jim Webb didn't like the idea of paying for it. The whole thing would have added a 5.6% surtax to people earning $1 million or more. And that's how the bill would have been paid for. The Republicans are against, paying for things, evidently.
Of course they are.
Jim Webb and Joe Manchin. Joe Manchin is the guy from West Virginia. Some Democrats in name only. They were against it, but they ultimately voted against. They voted for cloture. That's what the vote was. It was a cloture vote. And, you remember all of this stuff from the healthcare debate.
Oh, yeah.
60 votes.
How could I forget that? You bring up the healthcare debate, and I respond the way Inspector Dreyfus did when you mentioned Clouseau's name to him in the old Pink Panther movies. Like, my eye starts to twitch, and I want to hide under the desk.
Yeah. Yeah. It's unbelievable. Here we are. Unemployment is stuck at 9.1%. Here was an opportunity to drop it to, it's still going to be high, but it's not as high. It would have been at 8.1% with this jobs bill. This would have created almost 1.9 million new jobs. That's what this would have done. The Republicans filibustered 1.9 million new jobs. John Tester, for God's sake, filibustered 1.9 million new jobs. Well, John Tester
does. It doesn't matter. Once again, they're ruled by their base, and it's what their base wants. What did we talk about a couple of weeks ago about how the Republicans are actually incredibly easy to figure out? It seems like they're all over the place, like they're hypocritical, like they're back and forth. They're shamelessly hypocritical. Yeah. The fact is they're incredibly easy to figure out. Obama is always wrong, no matter what happens. They can say something 2 days ago, and if Obama suggests it, turns it around, man, that's it. Forget it. It's all over.
Yeah.
And that's the way they operate. So no, it doesn't, you could call it the every male heterosexual member of Congress gets a blowjob bill and they would vote it down.
Yeah. Well, Sullivan linked to someone this week who wrote that, and I forget the guy's name, but he was writing that that if the tables had been turned, if you'd had a President McCain and a Democratic majority in the House, maybe, basically 50-50 in the Senate, where the Republicans couldn't get 60 votes, what have you. Basically the opposite of what we have right now. That the Democrats would have been just as obstructionist as the Republicans. And I don't buy that for a goddamn second.
No, I don't think so either.
If you go back to, and I use this as an example in the Huffington Post this week, I went back to the Patriot Act. I mean, that thing passed. Only one person voted against the Patriot Act. And this had the wind in its sails of 9-11. You also had just this patriotic fervor that arose after 9-11. The bombing of Afghanistan had already started by the time the Patriot Act was passed. So you had this.
You know what the difference is, though? The difference is that they have for the Patriot Act, they had an incredibly popular president, not just sort of patriotism backing them at their back, but also a president who at that time, obviously, because of what was going on, was so popular that you didn't want to take a stand against him. I think Republicans now obviously smell blood in the water, and there's no way they're going to release their death grip from around Obama's throat, figuratively, of course.
Yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, but regardless, I mean, there was a point in time when the Democrats, I mean, Patrick Leahy, I mean, the only Democrat who voted against the Patriot Act, in fact, the only senator who voted against it was Russ Feingold. I mean, all the rest of them. I mean, John Edwards voted for the Patriot Act. Hillary Clinton voted for the Patriot Act. I mean, one after another. They just all got in line and voted with the president on this draconian bill that rolled back all kinds of civil liberties, just basically turned us into a police state that still exists today. It hasn't been rolled back at all. You know, if the tables had been turned, seriously, if the tables had been turned, the Republicans had the Democrats passed the Patriot Act, had a Democratic president put his weight behind it, if a Democrat had been president during 9/11, the Republicans would have run on repealing the Patriot Act. I mean, every single one of them, just like they're doing now with Obamacare, with the Health Care Reform Act. So I mean, how many times did they say we're going to repeal or replace in Tuesday night's debate? I mean, it was at least 24 times the words repeal and replace were mentioned with regards to the health care reform bill. I mean, it's staggering the differences between these parties. And to say that the Democrats would have been obstructionist on this thing, the Democrats would never have voted against American jobs. It's just a bill called the American Jobs Act. You just can't vote against something like that. You can't vote against something that's named that. Maybe a few would have stood up against it.
Well, that, you know what, I think that goes back to another thing that we talked about a few weeks ago, which is, I think I brought it up, about the fact that the Republicans genuinely believe that they are entitled to the White House. They are entitled to control of government. And if somebody is in there who is not them, these days especially, they will do anything it takes now. And I don't think it hasn't always been this way. But these days, they will do whatever it takes. That person is illegitimate, and there's no reason to even bother for a second trying to compromise, trying to work with. You know, they'll pay a certain amount of lip service, but they're not going to do shit to help that person, even if it means completely fucking the country.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the policy, again, and I really feel like a broken record when it comes to this, but I think it's so important to continue to repeat things like this, especially now with there being a solid movement on the ground, at least one that's gaining a shitload of momentum. And we got to keep hammering these points. If there's one lesson, apart from naming our bills appropriately instead of coming up with some stupid goddamn acronym, you know, that no one's going to be able to, the ARRA and the AC. None of that. That's the worst way to name a bill. You know, the American Jobs Act is the perfect way. We're going to borrow that from the Republicans. The other thing we can borrow from the Republicans.
The America Fuck Yeah Act. I like that.
Right. The other thing we can borrow, of course, is to stay on message and just repeat these things over and over again, even if it makes us sound a little bit psychotic.
I do that because I have no short-term memory because all those brain cells were burned away by drugs back in the 90s.
That's right. So you're constantly thinking to yourself, did I mention this again?
Yes. My whole life is like that.
Did you find yourself telling the same stories over and over again?
Oh, my God. Are you kidding me? Listen to this show. Jesus.
Well, again, welcome to our brand new Huffington Post audience. I'm sure the comments will be pleasant to read.
Oh, boy.
If you're thinking about falling off the opiates wagon, maybe now's gonna be a good time, Jess, because those comments and kind of wear some headgear or something.
That's quite all right.
Should be interesting.
Wait till we start bitching about Greenwald in Hampshire next week. Sirota.
Somehow we get
a matter of time.
I thought we were gonna make it through a whole show.
Not now that you know, we can draw the wrath of the Huffington Post peanut gallery.
I really do.
Not in Fall Pantry, but the Huffington Post people.
Yeah, my thing yesterday, I got the several progressives who were calling me an Obama apologist and Obama.
There you go.
Someone trying to tell me that President Obama is more conservative than Ronald Reagan.
Uh-huh. Yeah, the correct answer to that is go fuck yourself. Seriously.
Hey, thanks for listening. Thanks for tuning in. Drive safely, and we'll see you next week, Chaz.
Bye-bye.